Okay, I'd like to call this meeting to order, the January 23rd meeting of the Clallam County Public Utility District Number 1. Recording is, we recording now? Okay, we are recording comments now. So first on the agenda is public comments specific to the specific comments. Any specific comments from the public or?
Just to the agenda.
To the agenda, sorry.
Yes, we have one previous
hand from the public. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I would like to make some comments. I hope they are appropriate. And my name is Paul Pickett. And I live in the Gales edition of Port Angeles East. And I just want to say it's great to be back. I was avoiding the meetings over the last year because of my role as treasurer in Ken Hayes' campaign. And I will say the campaign helped me learn a lot about how the PUD operates and where there is room for improvement. I am eager to see what happens at Clallam PUD, and there is so much potential for really good things to happen. So the heart of it for me personally is addressing climate change, and we need to prepare for an uncertain future. So a few comments that come from that concern. The PUD really needs a new 20-year strategic plan, and that should include several important items to pursue local energy options. So, for example, can we make SWIM a giant solar generator with integrated rooftop generation? How can the PUD better serve the West End? Can you find projects to support job creation in the local economy out there? What other renewable energy options are on the horizon? Wave generation, wind, biomass. There's a lot of rapidly evolving technology. And I think really important, how should the PUD address BPA uncertainty? And regarding BPA, the PUD needs more BPA support for renewables through flexible power contracts, maybe getting away from the block purchase concept so you have more flexibility to generate power locally, and the issues with transmission wheeling if you're generating local power. The Snake River dams are obsolete. Their breaching really is inevitable. And you can see things headed that way with report after report. And I believe the PUD should be preparing for uncertainty in BPA's power grid and become a contributor to that grid. And in particular, the PUD should immediately rescind Resolution 2194-21, which was adopted in March 22, 2021. Not only is the resolution misguided and counterproductive, it was adopted with shockingly poor process and a lack of public input. And in addition, the current rate structure should be overhauled to significantly reduce the base rate. This was a major issue with voters in the campaign. Base rates should be less than $10. My base rates in Olympia with Puget Energy were like $7. This is more fair to low-income ratepayers, and it supports energy conservation and rooftop solar generation. So those are my comments. Thank you, everyone on the PUD, for the great service. I do enjoy my dependable PUD water and electricity here at my home. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. We also have a written comment that has been submitted by Christine Reed, who is not here. The commissioners have those comments, and we appreciate them. Thank you. Next item, unless there are any more public comments out there? No.
Yeah.
Wait, is there another hand?
There we go. So I just saw the unmute button. Anyway, I'm Randy Brackett. I live on Cameron Road in the SWIM area. And I see on the agenda that there's a presentation by Wapuda, but I was disappointed that there was nothing in the packet so that we could learn a little bit about what's to be presented and thereby provide any good input, response, or questions. So I just would ask that the PUD review people who are going to be doing presentations and make sure their packet, that they have something that helps describe what the presentation will be about.
Okay, thank you for your comment. We'll see if we can get those posted.
Yeah, we can put them on the website. We just received the packet before the agenda went out.
Right, yeah, it was just right late coming.
Yeah.
Any other public comments? Okay, thank you. Agenda revisions, are there any, Sean?
None today.
Okay. Okay, next item is approval of the consent agenda. We have A, minutes of the January 9th, 2023 regular meeting. B, claim vouchers for January 9th through January 17th, 2023 for a total of $1,132,555.30. And C, payroll vouchers for the period of December 16th, 2022 through January 15th, 2023. Any discussion? Questions on the consent agenda? If not, do I have a motion?
I'll move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
I'll second the motion. So let's have a vote on the consent agenda. All those in favor of the consent agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, business items next is we have, we'll put a presentation, and I also want to recognize some of the folks that are here from Laputa and so, and also from Clark County. We have Jane Van Dyke, Commissioner of Clark County Public Utilities, and she's Secretary for the PUD Association. We have George Kahn, who is the Executive Director. We have Liz Anderson, who is the Deputy Executive Director, and we have Nicholas Garcia, the Policy Director of Laputa. So welcome, and look forward to your presentation. We ready for that?
So we previewed it. It's still there from a half an hour ago. There we go. So thank you for the warm welcome. I'm Jane Van Dyke, Commissioner Clark Public Utilities, and as Commissioner Waddell said, well, Secretary of the State PUD Association, and we're pleased to be here today. As the slide says there, we're on a reuniting tour after so many years of being stuck at home at our own utilities and not meeting in person. The utility PUD Association, under the leadership of our president, Gary Arsenal, has got us out meeting with all the different PUDs around the state. And I think we're about two-thirds of the way through meeting with everybody. And so we're pleased to be here today to hear not only for us to talk, but to hear from you about some of your concerns about the issues, legislation, and regulation facing your utility or what you see for our state association. We are hopefully bringing that message of working together, working cooperatively, makes us stronger, especially as we do our work around the state and in Olympia. And with that, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Mr. Kahn.
I haven't heard someone address me as Mr. Kahn in a long time, so thank you for that. So thanks for inviting us here today. We're really happy to be here. What we've got for you is I'm going to do a good job as executive director and turn it over to someone else in a second. We're going to have Liz give a background of the association, the history, some of the services that we offer, which you may be familiar with or not, and hopefully it'll be illustrative of what we can do. Nicholas is going to talk about some policy issues, and we're anxious to hear what concerns and questions that you've got. We really are happy to be here. I think this is our 16th. We have another visit tomorrow up in Skagit. And so we found out a lot. And one of the things that We've talked about in other meetings, we've learned a lot these meetings, and we've made changes based on what we've heard about the concerns that the BUDs have, some of the ways that state operates, the associations. We got a lot of good information from listening, and that's what we do best, is to listen to what you have to say and take that into account, hopefully to improve the way that we provide you and the other BUDs with our services. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Liz.
Good afternoon, commissioners. It's good to see you. When we began these reunited meetings with the various PUDs, one thing that we recognized is there were a lot of new faces within our public utility districts. There were new commissioners, there were new staff members, and they weren't all familiar with the resources available to them through WAPUTA. When we started having conversations with various staff members and commissioners and managers within the utilities, we recognized that even some people who had been with the utilities for a very long time weren't aware of all the resources that were available. So we thought we'd use part of this reunited tour to reacquaint our PUDs with the resources, services that are available to you through WAPUTA, so you're really able to maximize the value of your membership. And so we're going to talk about a few things, but I wanted to start off with, let me see, I'm not getting a...
Try pointing out.
Does that do anything?
I'm kicking it.
So I'll let you know, just for the record, there's a little technology gremlin that follows me around. So this, the rest of the staff would be laughing if they saw this, because this happens all the time with me. So it's all me. Okay. Probably best. Well, the next slide, thank you very much, is just our contact information in case you don't have us on speed dial already, and we welcome hearing from any of you at any time when you have any questions or if we can be a resource to you. Thank you very much. So I wanted to spend just a few minutes talking about the association history, because it really is reflected in how we function and how we're structured today. The association was formed in 1936. And that was 6 years, of course, after Initiative Number 1 was passed by the citizens of Washington, allowing formation of public utility districts. That was a significant year because in that year there was a constitutional challenge to the PUD law. Obviously, we were victorious. We were able to be here today. In that year, the organization that was the driver of the PUD movement, the Washington State Grange, called together the commissioners of the existing PUDs, and there were several that were already formed by that time. They met in Seattle, and basically they said, we are handing over the reins of leadership to you, the elected commissioners, to drive the PUD movement forward, to make sure our existing PUDs are viable well into the future, and at that time the focus was on forming new PUDs. So that led to the formation of the Washington PUD Commissioners Association. And that changed in 1952. At that time, there was recognition that there needed to be a focus on operational excellence, because if PUDs weren't doing a good job of serving their communities, that really opened the door for those who were opponents of PUDs to whittle away their authorities or make it very difficult for PUDs to provide service to their communities. And that's when the services expanded and we got into information sharing and training as well as advocacy work. And at that time, the name changed to the Washington Public Utility Districts Association. Our mission is to support our member PUDs to make sure that you are able to provide the excellent service to your customers that we all strive to provide. And our services fall into these four categories: advocacy, training and education, collaboration and information sharing. One of the wonderful things about the PUD family is we don't compete with each other. So we're able to share resources, and as someone once said, we admire and acquire from other PUDs, so we have that ability to share. And then policy research and analysis, which you'll be hearing more about with Nicholas. This is our Waputa team. I hope these faces are familiar to you. The one thing we all agree on is these pictures are woefully out of date, and some of us would like our pictures replaced more than others, but hopefully they look familiar. The amount of expertise on this team is really, I think, impressive. I just feel privileged to work with this group of people. We have about 100 years of expertise, utility expertise, reflected on this screen. I mentioned that really the association began as a commissioner-driven organization. It is today. And you see that in our structure. The board of directors, they set this strategic direction for the association, and that is made up of elected commissioners. You have a voice in that strategic direction. Our executive committee includes our elected officers, and Commissioner Van Dyke is one of them. They are elected commissioners, and you have every opportunity to run for one of those positions should you choose. We have policy committees who really do the deep dive on our issues, and this is where we really can discuss the objectives that we share and start working on our policy direction. And then we have a variety of other committees, which you are welcome to participate in, and many of you already do. We've started commissioner education for our new commissioners. We have strategic planning. The general managers meet at least twice a year. And then we have a budget, finance, and audit committee, as well as awards that we present once a year. We have a variety of professional roundtables, and this is, I think, a really important feature of the association. We gather together professionals from within your PUD, and they meet to do a deep dive on their area of expertise, to share information, and then we arrange for training that they're interested in receiving. And we have a variety of professional groups that meet. There's a slide with a list, but it's everyone from human resource officers to customer service to administrative assistants, communications professionals, records officers, and they share information and receive training.
Can I go back and ask a question?
Yes, absolutely.
On the strategic planning, oh, you say other committees, strategic planning, is that a formalized group or is it just an ad hoc call every?
It's a formalized group, and the process that we go through for strategic planning is we start in our policy committees and we review our strategic plan. It's done on a yearly basis. The policy committees look at the strategic plan and determine whether they think some changes need to be made. The committee chairs and the vice chairs of the policy committees all sit on the strategic planning committee. Everybody is welcome to attend the strategic planning committee meeting. They go through the recommended changes, and then they provide a recommendation, which then goes to the board of directors for consideration. So that's the process.
How is the meeting announcements communicated? You just send out a regular email when you're going to have a meeting?
We have it on our meeting agendas, and it typically occurs, the strategic planning committee meets in May. So the committees are doing their work prior to that time, and that's announced. So everybody knows that it's coming up. And again, everybody's welcome to attend that meeting.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. We hold our meetings, they're almost monthly, not every month, and you have all attended those meetings. We appreciate your participation and your thoughts as we discuss important issues. The committees are made up of one voting delegate. You decide that delegate according to the services that you offer. The chairs and the vice chairs for each committee, which basically are responsible for running the committee meetings and putting together the agendas with the help of staff, they're selected by a vote of those committees, and you're welcome to serve as chair or vice chair. We hold those elections in April, and there are announcements. You'll start hearing the announcements in February. So everybody has plenty of time to put their hat in the ring if they want to serve in that position. And one thing I really wanted to point out is that your entire staff is welcome to attend our meetings. And so if you have a new staff member that may be new to PUDs or someone who is new to the industry, they're welcome to sit in. It's a good education and to hear what's happening in the industry and what's happening with other PUDs throughout the state. I'm going to hand this over to Nicholas in just a second to talk about our advocacy efforts. We advocate both on the state level and federally. And so right now we're very busy because the legislature is in session. The policy direction for our advocacy is set by the members. And that is a process that starts, quite frankly, as soon as one legislative session is done. We are guided by the sideboards of our strategic plan, so it's consistent. And the association lends strength not just to the whole family of PUDs, but in cases we will lend strength to a single PUD that has an issue that they're advocating for or a group of PUDs. So, for example, we're working right now in cooperation with Clallam PUD and six other PUDs that are seeking funding for culvert repair utility relocates. So this is the cost of moving utility systems as the State Department of Transportation does construction work to repair culverts for fish passage. That's a significant cost for PUDs. Right now, our franchise agreements with the state require that PUDs pay for those costs in normal circumstances. That is something that PUDs can manage in their budget, but just the scope of the work that needs to be done puts tremendous stress on PUD budgets.
Question is, will PUDA a 501
C3? Six. Okay. So our lobbying team advocates year-round, and we engage in the legislative activity, but we're also engaged in regulatory processes, which Nicholas will be talking about with you. I'm not going to go through all this, but this is a list of our advocacy services. And the one thing I'd like to point out about this is many of these did not exist 10 years ago. They came about because of the needs of members. And our focus really was making sure that member PUDs can stay engaged in important policy discussions, both at the legislature, in the regulatory environment, as well as in Washington, D.C., without having to be there every day. So we try to keep you very connected in a variety of means that work for you. These all are a result of requests from our member PUDs. So really, you have an opportunity to shape what works for you. Just let us know. Okay, before we go on to just touching on training and education, I am going to hand it over to Nicholas to talk about some advocacy work that we're doing and how we work to address the issues and topics that are important to you.
So good afternoon. Again, I'm Nicholas Garcia, the policy director here at WPUDA. And I want to start off by just saying that as the lead in the policy advocacy role, my job, as was stated, is to implement the policies or to strive to implement the policies that are adopted by the executive board. And these are not, my actions are not to deal with my own personal biases or issues. It is to represent you and all your colleagues in the PUDs at the state legislature and before regulatory agencies. And we have a variety of venues that we participate in, both regional and local. Now, the other thing is that when we think about a policy issue that comes before a state agency or before the state legislature, the first thing we ask is, well, how does this fit with our strategic plan and policy directives? And there's a document that we use, but I think I can boil it down to three objectives on the electric side. We want reliable service, We want clean service, and we want low-cost service. And we have to balance those three things, because when an issue comes up, sometimes it focuses on one leg of that stool, and we have to think about how that interacts with the other legs so that we don't create unexpected issues and problems. But I'm going to give you an example of an issue that came up a year ago, and it's still being dealt with this year at the state legislature. So many of you are probably aware that in Northern California, there's been, over the last few years, many, many wildfires that were caused by utility equipment. So much so that a couple of, or one major utility, a for-profit utility in California, had to declare bankruptcy twice. It was so expensive, and the cost of the wildfires were in the billions of dollars. Well, there was an article in the Seattle Times talking about that event, and then basically asked the rhetorical question, well, what are we doing here in Washington to prepare so that we don't have the same sorts of issues? Well, a state legislator, Senator Christine Rolfes, saw that, and she said, we need a bill. And so she drafted a bill last year, and it essentially said that any wildfire – I'm paraphrasing, and this is, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm going to be clear about that. It's my own personal paraphrase. Any wildfire that involves utility equipment is utility's fault. This is essentially what the bill would have done, which meant if someone had hit a car and hit a pole and the pole fell down and started a fire, it would still be our fault. And, you know, the liability associated with that would have been tremendous, and our ability to get insurance would have been very, very much jeopardized, more than it already is. And so we found out about this bill. It was dropped on a Monday. We actually found out about it on a Tuesday, and that Thursday was the first hearing. So in a situation like that, we can't go to the board. We can't, you know, call up 27 public utility districts, 23 of which would provide electric service, and say, hey, what should we do about this? We look to our strategic plan and our policy documents, and we say, how does this fit in there? And in this particular instance, it was pretty evident that this was going to be a problem. So we spent the next 3 months, well, next 2 months working with the senator, explaining what the problem was, why this was going to be a challenge, and then working with the senator and others on a solution. Now, I want to be really clear that PUDs are the largest supplier of electricity in Washington State. We supply about 38-39% of the retail electricity. The investor-owned utilities provide 36-37%. The municipal utilities like Seattle City Light, Tacoma, about 18, and the Corps about 6-7. And the reason why I mention all of these is that while we're quote unquote the largest collective supplier, we're not, no one of our utilities is the largest utility in the state. And we can't get things done without working with our fellow utilities. So one of the things that we do very, very strongly is we reach out and we find out how we can work together. Now there was a time, and I'm just going to digress for a second, there was a time where utilities tended to be in competition with each other. I think a lot of the issues, the policy issues that have come up over the last few years have kind of reoriented utilities to being more collaborative and more trying to work together towards common good of being able to maintain the three things I talked about, low cost, reliable service, and clean service. So anyway, we worked with them to come up with a solution that the senator agreed with. And we went from strongly opposed to this legislation, which we testified that, to supporting it. And the legislation got out of the Senate and stalled in the House, so it did not pass. And the reason why it stalled really had nothing to do with the legislation. It had to do with timing and some other issues. So it's back this year. And during the interim, we worked with the senator. We met with her a couple of different times, explained, you know, well, while we liked the bill, there was a few areas we thought could be improved, and so we made some suggestions, and the bill was dropped when it was introduced. some of our suggestions were taken and many other suggestions were taken that we didn't anticipate. And some of them would have been or are challenging. So we've been working with the senator, and in fact, she asked us to lead the utility effort to come up with an alternative. And we delivered that alternative to her on Friday, close of business on Friday. And I'm actually very curious about how she'll react to it. And I'm hopefully we'll find out in the next day or two. It did change things a little bit, but this is what we try to do. We try to form a close, collaborative working relationship, not only with our fellow utilities, but also with state entities. But it sometimes can be a challenge. I'm going to turn to one other issue. There has been an effort by the Department of Labor and Industries to impose a new rule that would basically, to protect workers, say that if temperatures got above a certain temperature, that the employees had certain amounts of break time in order to keep cool. And this rule came out, as we understand it, of the agriculture industry and the desire to make sure agricultural workers were protected. And, you know, that is a good thing. That is a really good thing. But what we pointed out to the LNI is that we've been dealing with hot temperatures for a long time. We have protocols in place for how you deal with hot temperatures. And in fact, and this is something I learned through this process, before a line crew starts working on any project, they assess the project. They assess the time it will take, what the work is going to be need to do, what the communication protocols, and who is going to do what, and what's the time, what's the schedule for events. And this way, they can build in, when it's appropriate, that rest time to cool down. So we explained this to LNI, and we provided feedback to them and a letter saying, hey, look, when we go to a project, we need to be able to use common sense and good work processes that we have well developed, and sometimes they will work with your rules and sometimes they won't. So we're asking them to provide an exemption. And at a minimum, we're asking them to provide an exemption in case of emergency. If you have a tree that has fallen down and, you know, you have a live wire on the ground, we have to deal with that. We have to deal with that expeditiously. We can't leave a wire on the ground. And if it's going to take more than the amount of time that the LNI has identified as the appropriate amount of time, we want the ability to respond immediately for public safety purposes. And so the LNI is taking into consideration our requests. They will be issuing a proposed rule in the next 2 months or so. At least that's the schedule they've indicated to us. And we will continue to work with them to make sure that, you know, the work that we do can be done in an effective, safe manner. And so these are just the kind of things that we work on all the time. And we have a wide variety of scope of issues. We've deal with everything from net metering and rooftop solar to worker safety to siting of new infrastructure and many, many other issues. It just depends on what has come before state agencies and what comes before the state legislature. And, you know, we're here on your behalf. Now, the one last thing I will say is that we have a wonderful feedback mechanism. So just because I have the strategic document in front of me doesn't mean that I will always perfectly understand sort of what the mood is of the commissioners and what their desires are. So because we meet 10 times a year, pretty much monthly, I can say, hey, this is what I'm doing. At the Energy Committee, I'll say, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm working on. This is the positions I'm taking. This is the arguments I'm making. Does anyone have any thoughts, any suggestions, ways to improve, or ways or any concerns? And so we have this feedback mechanism. And sometimes people say, well, I don't know why you did this. And I will explain why I did that. And sometimes that'll be sufficient. Sometimes that won't be. But it's a way to get feedback, make sure everyone understands what we're doing and why we're doing it. And, you know, if the committee tells me, no, 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 you shouldn't go that direction, you need to move, then we move. But it is an opportunity for everyone here to provide, or, you know, the commissioners to provide feedback on the positions we're taking to make sure that we're appropriately representing the organization. So with that, I'll turn it back over unless you have any questions.
So one of the things I wanted to add on our advocacy efforts is collectively our 27-member PUDs represent about half the legislative districts in Washington, and we represent most of the congressional districts. So we have utilities who have developed really good working relationships with their local legislators and their members of Congress, and that gives us an opportunity to gain access to those people and really have some good conversations about important issues that are of interest to everyone. Training and education is a big piece of what we do. This is just a list of some of the things that we do. Again, we're just starting new commissioner training and education. We have commissioner roundtables as commissioners. If there is a topic that you would like to focus on during commissioner education, we have a committee called the Commissioner Education Committee, and you are welcome to come forward and say, I would like to learn about this. I'd like to spend a little more time talking about this subject. Those are sessions for you to exchange information and learn from other commissioners and share your experience with other commissioners. I talked about the roundtables for utility professional staff. They're held twice a year, and we love to see the staff from Clallam PUD participating. We share industry news and information with you, and we'll provide periodically utility briefings on industry trends. We also do this with our legislators and members of Congress. So we'll typically focus on one single issue that's a really important topic at the time. We have a meeting with congressional staff when we go back to Washington, D.C. We make that trip once a year. And it might be a broadband issue, it might be a water issue, it might be energy, just to do a deep dive with them. We do that with legislators as well. We've had periodic briefings. In fact, we had new legislative briefings in December to introduce them to PUDs, who we are and how we serve our communities. And then we also offer individual utility consultation education. If there is some education training that is specific to your PUD that you would like us to arrange or to provide, we're happy to do that. We've done that for several PUDs in the past, and we will find good trainers or pull on our expertise in-house to provide that kind of consultation training. We do a lot in the area of collaboration and information sharing, and this is where I get back to the admire and acquire. Because we can work collaboratively together and don't have to reinvent the wheel. So one of the things I want to point out on this list is the surveys, which are available to your utility staff and all of you. If you have a question or you want to consider a new policy and you're wondering what other PUDs are doing, you can send us that question. We will survey all the utilities. We will send back a report on what everybody else is doing, including any appropriate documents to accompany that. And then we also archive those surveys. So in a lot of instances, we'll have questions from different utilities. And I'll tell you about 90% of the time, we have the survey available to them. So we really encourage your staff to take advantage of that. Nicholas talked about our efforts and working with other organizations. We have very good working relationships within the utility industry. We also work with a variety of state and regional organizations. We have a local governments meeting that we hold quarterly. So this is the Association of Washington Counties, Association of Washington Cities, the fire districts, the hospital districts. We are part of the National Special Districts Coalition, which is an organization that is focused on special districts. And we got involved with them during COVID and on funding from the federal government because, as you know, PUDs weren't necessarily eligible for direct funding. So we started working with them, and they are a great resource on grant funding that's coming through the Infrastructure and Jobs Act. So if your utility is in need of some support with grant funding, they're a resource that is available to you. With that, we just want to thank Clallam PUD for being such an active part of our association. You have contributed a lot over the years. It was great to see you at our January meeting and at our legislative reception. Your voices are very important, and we value your input. And I'll stop there. And, George, do you have any closing comments?
Usually I stay here because Liz does such a great job. She can sit down and I can field questions that you might have. The one thing that I would point out for our advocacy work is the bills that come up in the legislature, everyone's got a problem they want solved. And legislators drop bills trying to solve a problem. And when it comes to utilities, whether it's telecom, water, or energy, someone's got some problem and they want to solve it. Part of our job is trying to figure out what the problem they're trying to solve is. And reverse engineer these bills to find out if they're a problem or not. PUDs, because electric utilities, PUDs, and others already invested in security, secure operations, safety, cybersecurity. We already have standards that deal with these things because of the nature of the industry. And so we have to educate legislators that we've already done these things. And if you're going to put another layer on, whatever it might be, the unintended consequences, you may remove the layer that we put in there that was protecting us. So that's really a lot of the job, is trying to reverse engineer, unlearn some of the problems that are specified in legislation that don't exist, and perhaps fix problems that do exist. And that is not easy. The legislators are really committed to getting their bills through. Nicholas talked about the wildfire bill, and we worked real hard to make sure that the original intent of the bill was to fix something, but to fix the right thing. So with that, I also want to thank you for participating, being such good members, and being part of the ecosystem of PUDs and utilities. So with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions or if you have any comments or thoughts. Like I said, we learn a lot from these meetings. It'd be great to hear from you.
I have one question. I've been following the bill tracking that you guys do as part of your advocacy. And I think it was the first week's. I noticed three categories of position or attitude, I guess, for the bill: support, concern, and neutral. I don't know if there's a fourth one, oppose or not. But I was curious, on one of the ones that were labeled concern, I wasn't sure what that meant. And it was a bill that I thought was very possibly in our PUD's best interest. It had to do with the Public Works Trust Fund and access to that. So I was just curious, when it's labeled concern, what does that mean to Bob Pruder?
So it's science and art. And there are basically two categories. We rank them high, medium, low. And then for each bill, we have a support, concerns, like you said. So what concerns mean? So concerns can mean we oppose the bill unless you fix these things, or it can mean we support this bill, but we have a few things we don't like. So we typically start out with concerns when we're not sure what the bill is going to do or if it might have some unintended consequences. We don't know. So we'll start at concerns and work our way either to support, oppose, or don't care. Okay. You may be talking about the constitutional amendment, the Public Works Trust Fund setting up a – there's a bill – I don't know if this is the one you're referring to. There's a bill that is trying to get a constitutional amendment to have a public works assistance account in the Constitution to protect those funds.
Correct.
So my original review of the bill when I did it was to, oh, we love this bill. We'll support it. But then when I talked to some of the other people who were looking at that bill, there were some perhaps unintended consequences of not protecting some other funds that were part of that. And so we may get to support it, but we need to work on it to make sure that, and this is the concerns, we like that part, that looks really good, but what about these other funds, the tax revenues that come in to support the Public Works Trust Fund, aren't necessarily protected by that constitutional amendment. So we could have an amendment to protect the fund, but if we don't have an amendment that protects the sources of funds, we'll have a problem. And that's, and so it's a little bit of art. So we don't want to come out and oppose a bill when we're unsure what the intent was. There are some bills we would oppose, like strict liability for utilities in wildfire. We're going to oppose that. It's consistent. But a lot of bills, we just don't understand what the problem they're trying to solve. So we try not to have a knee-jerk reaction. Maybe we'll really think of the bill, but before we'll try to work on the bill.
All right, fair enough, thanks.
Okay.
Any other questions? Well, George, I have one it's kind of a big one. You know, we at the PUD here, we appreciate all the work on the legislature you guys are doing. We think, you know, it's a lot of moving parts, and you guys do a great job and so forth. But another big issue, of course, you're aware of, is these 2028 contracts that we're moving into. And as a small utility, you know, we're concerned that, in year 10 from now or 15, what's going to happen? And I guess my question is, I know that like Nicholas has worked from time to time on resource adequacy issues and stuff like that, but is there anything else that WAPUTA could be doing that could help elucidate the gorilla here is like, what's this power going to cost? And that's the thing that's got a lot of people afraid and scared.
Right. That's a great question. It's not the first time I've heard it. And so there are some things that we are doing to try to look at the cost of utility resources. As Nicholas mentioned, the three legs of the stool. The clean one, we sort of know what's going on. The affordability is one that I don't think the legislature has paid enough attention to, whether it be the net metering or other things. I don't think there's as much attention paid to the affordability. And on the reliability side, we are concerned that there's not enough attention. Those things all have cost impacts, whether you're a Bonneville customer or you're not a Bonneville customer. On those areas, I think we are playing a strong role in trying to make sure that the legislature, where our prime focus is, make sure they look at these things. We've had supporting policies that say if you're going to develop an energy policy, make sure to look at the affordability. If you're going to develop energy policy, make sure you look at the impact for the reliability. When it comes to the Bonneville 2028 contracts, we don't have a direct role in those contracts or even in negotiating because our members have their own way of negotiating contracts, and that's not something that a 501c6 ought to be doing. So we do our best to try to bring in the issues that we have some control over, control loosely defined, with the legislature, with D.C., when we go to Congress, issues related to the cost of Bonneville, making sure that those who wish to privatize it, and we push back. So we try to make sure our delegation continues to act as a board of directors with a fiduciary responsibility to make sure Bonneville is providing cost-effective, reliable, and clean energy resources. So that's a long-winded answer. We try to do where we fit in, and this is for our members, where do we have agreement, where we fit, what's the appropriate role for a state trade association focused on PUDs that provide water, electricity, telecommunications, renewable natural gas, renewable hydrogen, where can we have our major input with our resources, and what is outside of our bounds where we could perhaps be helpful but not have a direct influence over them. And I think you've heard this before,
yeah.
So it shouldn't be a big surprise.
All right, thanks, George.
You're welcome.
Okay, anybody else? Well, we thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
It was great, and look forward to another visit from you guys. So next on the agenda is the acceptance memo of a completion for bid number 2211002 for a well standby generator. And I guess Bowen Kendrick is going to give us that. Commissioners. So this is a acceptance memo of completion for bid number 211002. Staff request motion, second, and a vote to approve acceptance memo of completion bid number 21002, Angeles Electric, Inc. for Holgerson Well Supply Standby Generator for a total contract cost $139,890.29, including Washington State tax. Any questions, discussions about this?
Were you happy with the work?
I was. Yeah, significant delays. Primarily due to lead times on the genset. Angeles Electric decided to do the concrete work themselves. I think if they had an opportunity to rethink that, they probably had a sub for that. But beyond that, on budget, and the scope was spot on. So good.
Okay, then do I have a movement to accept memo of completion of bid number 211002. With Angeles Electric Incorporated for Hal Jerson Well Standby Generator for a total contract cost of $139,890.29, including Washington State sales tax. Do I have a motion?
So moved. As read.
Second.
Okay, we have a second. So all in favor of the motion, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is approved. Okay, the next item is acceptance of memo of completion of bid number 220308, and that, Bowen, you're going to brief us on that too.
Yes, I am. So staff requests a motion, second, and a vote to approve acceptance memo of completion bid number 220308 with PHC Consultants LLC for Funk and Ballard Alley Road Water Main Replacement Construction and Observation Services for a total contract cost $65,800.39, including Washington State tax.
Lots of questions?
Yeah, actually, I just have a quick question, Bowen. I'm curious for my own edification how BHC Consultants was solicited. I mean, I'm not sure how the PUD typically handles these, if it's an on-call or state contract or competitive solicitation.
So this one required a submittal of qualifications. So I believe Tom Martin was in charge of this along with Gene Tate, our contracts coordinator. I believe a request for qualifications went out, and BHC was determined to be most qualified for that.
Okay, good. Yeah. And same question as previous, you been happy with the services?
They came in under budget.
Okay.
Not all engineering firms are able to do
almost
that.
Almost never.
So I'd say they came in under budget and did a good job. This is basically, you know, engineering services during construction. So they did a good job.
Thank you.
Not in the contract.
The others? Okay. Do I hear a motion to approve acceptance memo of completion bid number 220308 with BHC Consultants LLC for Funk and Ballard Alley Road Water Main Replacement Construction and Observation Services for a total contract construction cost of $65,800.39, including Washington sales tax.
Second.
So moved as presented.
I will second the motion. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, the next item is the board will consider acceptance memo of completion bid number 220802. And Bowen, you're going to give us that one too?
Yes, sir. The staff requests a motion, second, and a vote to approve acceptance memo of completion bid number 220802 with Nova Contracting, Inc. for the Funk and Ballard Alley Road water main replacement for a total contract cost of $501,122.55, including Washington State tax.
Any questions or discussions? Okay, do I hear a motion to accept memo of completion bid number 220802 with Nova Contracting, Inc. for the Funk and Ballard Alley Road Water Main Replacement for a total contract cost of $501,122.55, including Washington State sales tax.
Move to approve as presented.
I'll second it. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Let's move this then to the next item, which is the 2023 Clallam Economic Development Council contribution request. Sean, you're going to discuss that?
Yeah, so in your board packet is a memo just outlining the request from Executive Director Colleen McAleer. This was previously voted on during our budget presentation in November. So right now the PUD has voted to approve a $5,000 contribution to the EDC. However, at our last meeting, Colleen gave a presentation in which she made a formal request to increase that to $25,000, which would be more in line, I guess, with the municipalities, the cities in Clallam County, and as well as the Port of Port Angeles. And so she's asking for a contribution from the PUD of $25,000 for your consideration.
Okay. Discussion?
Well, I'm in support of this in principle. I had a couple of concerns with the existing contract and the specificity of the deliverables and what value that specifically brings to the PUD. I mean, I spoke with Sean Worthington, General Manager of Worthington, about that and requested that there be some clarifications in the contract. And otherwise, I'd be willing to support it.
Okay. I guess in my take on this, I've now having worked with the calling with the her leadership with the executive of the EDC for the past few years, I have depended on her a lot to get the insights of what's going on in this county in terms of economic, just not development, but what's going on economically, and where do we stand? Clallam County is a troubled county in terms of jobs, housing. You name it, we've got it, and we're at the end of the electrical line, and this is stymieing our development. And Colleen has been very active in trying to connect potential investors and so forth with potential power resources, and has actively helped us develop a grid map that shows where it's easier to hook up to get power and where it's not, and I wish BPA would do the same thing. But anyway, I feel like this is a worthy request, and certainly it's shown its value in the past. So, my support of I support this.
If the commissioners want to give me a vote to approve the request, I can contact her, and I've got a scope of work for the 2023 budget, and I can present that to all of you incorporating Commissioner Hayes's comments into that.
Okay. Do I hear a vote? Let's vote. Who's in support of this this letter request here for $25,000 contribution? Aye.
Before we do that, I'm just by coincidence, we have this letter from ratepayer Christine Reed. I thought in the email I saw she requested it to be read into the record. Do you think we need to do that for transparency? Or
we can.
Just make note of it in this conversation as received.
Yeah, Commissioner Waddell noted receipt of it during the public comment section. Okay.
And that had to do directly with this topic.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, now historically that's what we've done.
Okay.
It's just that way. So all in favor? Aye.
Aye. Do we need a motion to approve this?
I think you need a motion.
Yeah.
You can't just
vote. Right. Thank you, Commissioner. Yeah. All right. I'll move that we approve the request for the additional $20,000 for a total of a $25,000 contract with the McClellan County Economic Development Council and the McClellan County PD.
I second the motion. And so all in favor of this motion, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
All opposed? One opposed. Okay. Next item is BPA post 2028 contract discussions. Anybody got anything on this one? Dawn, staff, anybody? John?
Personally, Dawn, I was unable to attend the provider of choice meeting last week. John, I don't know if you have anything that you'd like to share about it. I know that you attended.
On the provider of choice meeting, there was a fairly extensive discussion about new interconnects for generation. And apparently it looks like there will be some modification or changes for the 200 kW limit on generation. For power, they're going to raise that to 1 MW. And I believe they're going to, not certain yet, but they're going to reduce the requirements for transmission requirements for interconnect up to 3 MW, but they still want to keep the 200 kW limit for transmission for basically being able to know information is there for data and their functions. But they're not going to require BPA metering until it's, I believe, 3 MW, which basically is about a $50,000 or $60,000 cost for interconnects. If you're bringing in a small load, that can make the project cost prohibitive. So for the smaller generators, I think it just has to be communication, dial in or link in to record the the generators metering as opposed to a separate PD metering.
Yeah, and I missed a particular discussion. I dialed in the part of that, but missed the that readout on that. And I'd like to just point out that that's an example of us being persistent over the last year in hammering BPA directly at several levels. John Harrison, I was personally doing that. Also with the 2028 meetings that were going on, and then also some of the other associated meetings that dealt with resource adequacy in general that were tied to 2028. But in each case, it was just a constant, hey, guys, you can do this. Your own staff has shown you that you can do this. And, we just kind of embarrassed them, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, I think that it doesn't sound like much, but out here, a shift from 200 kilowatts to 1,000 kilowatts is a nice up in terms of the ability of some of the clients we have that I've seen working with the Executive Development Council that are trying to do interconnects. And so this will speed up that process because they won't have to go to BPA for anything less than 1,000, and we can get answers to them. You know, John can give them answers pretty quick, you know, in terms of the ability to hook up. So I think it's doesn't sound like much, but it's a little victory that will help a lot.
Yeah, that's a good point. The interconnect requirements, you know, the interconnect studies, I believe those will be lesser involved for the smaller generators. And I do recall, Jim, you were hitting this point even before provider of choice, you know, 2-3 years ago. Another thing that came up, there's been meetings at PPC. I don't know if the board was present, but you had different groups give different presentations that have not been fully engaged yet. I believe Ron gave a presentation on WAPAG where he went over, you know, what is it, the least harms in there?
Yeah, least worst option.
No worst off option.
Yeah.
And then you also had an interesting presentation by CNG and above contract high water mark group that made an argument that Tier 2 should be provided for at cost, predominantly with excess hydro as opposed to, you know, secondary sales. And there's some pretty good arguments, you know, potentially legal. Cost should be based on what it costs BPA to provide. And that's not exactly how it is now. They do basically what I would call a market equivalence of if BPA was going to market, not that they're actually going to market in every case. So there's a lot of interesting things going on. And I do believe over the next few months, a lot of things will come to a head on some of these really big issues.
John, I have a question for my own understanding. The current 200 kilowatt and the proposed megawatt threshold for interconnects, that's the threshold where the study doesn't have to be done. Is that correct?
Yeah, so basically 200 kW and less, you really don't even have to coordinate with BPA. And then as the generation size gets larger, the studies get more comprehensive and arduous to fulfill. I do believe, and I can't say with certainty until they come out with, you know, something on paper, but it does look like for even up to 3 megawatts on transmission that it's not going to be as onerous doing the studies. I need to get some more information before I'm definitive on that.
But part of what I was thinking about, and I can't remember where I heard this, it might have been when I was in Olympia for my Laputa training, casually talking with other commissioners, but currently there's a queue for the interconnects that require studies, and that depending on where you're in the queue can determine how far out before you'd even get the study. And what I heard that I found disturbing is that the PUDs, entities requesting the interconnects, can do that before they're actually ready, and then just because they know it's going to take a long time, so they're putting their applications in and they're taking up all the bandwidth for those that have projects that are ready today. Is that a policy level, or is that decision, or is that something that we would want to discuss in the post-2028 contract?
Well, it's being discussed on the length of time for interconnects. The word I got is it's probably not going to get better from BPA, but I don't know. But yeah, if you go through their list, it's on the website, and you see a lot of old interconnects. Some of them are definitely not going to proceed. You know, basically nobody's even paying attention to them. But yeah, it takes a long time, especially for the larger ones. Now, there is an interconnect study, I believe, for Ruby Flats, a solar project, about 150 megawatts, that you have a lot of PUD involvement. And I think Energy Northwest is trying to get that off the ground, but, you know, that's being evaluated now. I'm not sure how far along it is, but, yeah, that's, you know, takes years sometimes.
Ken, there's been a combination of people playing the game you're talking about and others legitimately putting it in, you know, because they're trying to get an answer from BPA, and it might take a year and a half to 2 years.
For us, if we had an industry that wanted to come to town and we had a place for them and required, you know, a larger interconnect, that could be very frustrating to the process.
Anyway, yes, I was just
very, very, very much so. And even on new large loads, you have to do a line load interconnect for new large loads that aren't generating, and that can take quite a bit of time too.
It just doesn't seem like you should be able to get your place in line unless you're really ready.
I would agree with that. That's common sense there.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else on EPA post 2028? All right. We'll move on to a letter request of support from the Sheriff's Office for Emergency Operations Center. Sean, you kind of cover that for us.
Yeah, I got a couple correspondence communications today. The first one, there's a draft letter in your board packet today that was approved by Undersheriff Ron Cameron here in Collin County. He's requesting that the PUD support the new joint public safety facility that's being planned for the new Emergency Operations Center. I believe it's going to be sited somewhere out near the airport. Just so you guys know, during major events, we do send personnel to the Emergency Operations Center to coordinate with the county EOC. And so I believe that it would make sense for the PUD to support this letter in the new operations center. Where it's at right now in the basement of the courthouse, if there was even a mild earthquake, I'm afraid that it would be taken out. And this new center that they're pursuing grant money for would be built to withstand large earthquake and catastrophes. So I think that we should support it.
Any discussion?
No, I'm in agreement.
I am too.
I'm not.
You're not in agreement, Rick? Okay.
Well, it's okay. I'll do it.
Excuse me. I'd like to hear your reasons, Commissioner Castro.
I don't have enough information to make a good decision on it.
Fair enough. Where are they at in the planning?
This is the letter of support is specifically for them to go out for grant funding.
For planning and design?
Yeah, I believe for planning and design.
Okay, well, do I hear a motion to support the request?
I'll move to support the request.
I'll second the motion. All in favor of the request?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Abstained.
Abstained, okay.
So the next couple of things here, the Jurassic Parliament training, just wanted to firm the date with you. T has it scheduled with Jurassic Parliament for March 1st. She no longer does in-person meetings, so it's going to be via Zoom. And so as soon as we get the Zoom information to log in, we'll send all that out to you. And the next thing here, the BPA special work session, this was requested by the board at the last meeting. And staff has scheduled this for February 8th from 1 to 4 p.m. And we staff will provide a presentation. And then Ryan Neal from WAPAG is also going to come down and partake in that presentation. And so T is going to be sending out this week invites out to all the city municipalities, tribal organizations, county commissioners, the EDC, the NODC, and others. So we'll get the word out that we're going to have that special work session on February 8th. So please mark that on your calendars from 1 to 4. And then along those same lines, I got a request from Commissioner Waddell to do another special meeting on February 21st, which is a Tuesday, and that would be from 1 to 3 p.m., and Commissioner Waddell would like to personally give a presentation on the lower Snake River dams and then open it up to public comment. So just making sure that the commissioners are available on that date. It's the 21st.
Oh, I'm sorry, was that February 21st?
February 21st from 1 to 3 p.m. It would be a special meeting. And I can have
one comment on the BPA post 2028. When we've been discussed this kind of round and round, we talked about the 2028 for sure, and that's why Ryan Neal was here. But we also recognized there were other power related issues that that could be locally generated resources, resiliency, solar, wind, whatever, that could play into our post 2028. World, and that we would like some discussion on those or allow the public to air their input and get some of their opinion on what they might see as alternatives to, you know, just the BPA choice. So I was suggesting, my fellow commissioners, that we, if it's a little broader than BPA, it's just BPA / power in general post 2028. That's okay with you guys.
We will do the best that we can. We're not experts in that field by any stretch, but we'll give the information that we have.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let's engage the public and, you know, our, you know, you've got, I know you've got the list of all the players out there that want to play, so we'll give them a chance.
And then I'll have T send out a reminder, but the meeting that the Commissioner Waddell is requesting would be February 21st from 1 to 3 p.m., but I'll have her send out an invite to all of you regarding that to check your availability. And that's all I have for correspondence communications.
Okay. That gets us to staff reports?
Commission reports.
That was it. Okay. Board actions for staff.
No, number item 7.
Where I'm lost.
Item 7, commission reports.
Oh, commission reports. Right. So, okay. My commission report was provider of choice comment, and also I dialed into Waputa as best I could, you know, from some various medical treatments. And George, I'm glad you're here, because one of the things that came up at the executive board just as I dialed in was the discussion on the support for the Snake River dams. And this is what once again got my attention, that we need a little education here. We need to kind of look at what are the government documents saying and present those to people and the public. It's been asked over and over again at this level, and we've not done it. And so this is what we'll do with a workshop and kind of bore down into some of these issues and kind of flesh out what's behind that. Where's the claim, and then what is the, you know, the government documents? What's the empirical evidence? What's the whatever it is out there that's either supports or doesn't support these kind of statements that you had in your November 30th congressional talking points, which are similar to ones that were you had last year too, which, you know, I commented with, a 14-page letter. But anyway, that's sort of what prompted me to, time to have a workshop and invite people in and let's talk about this. And you guys are certainly welcome. Okay, other commission reports, Ken?
Yeah, I don't have a specific association or organization report. I did attend my first session of new commissioner training at Waputa and thought that was very helpful, enjoyed meeting everybody. I did sit in the next day on the telecom committee meeting and most of the energy committee meeting. I saw that Commissioner Pascal was in attendance. He's our delegate. It was interesting to hear the discussions and a little bit of debate. There's clearly some issues on the telecom side. You know, mapping appears to be a big problem. But there's also a lot of funding out there, and so it would be good for us, for our PUD, to be able to pursue some of that. I did appreciate that Waputa was, I think they were submitting a letter to the State Broadband Board addressing a couple of issues like defining open access, which I thought the proposed changes were appropriate and helpful. So that was pretty much it for me, other than I did attend the legislative reception on Wednesday night. I thought that went well. It was fun to do that. I've done those kinds of things in the past and find them helpful to meet folks, get a chance to talk to everybody. I was very pleased to see two of our
legislators there, representatives Farringer and Chapman were both in attendance and busy talking to people most of the time.
Yeah, I missed it.
But anyway, so that's really all I have. I should have more assignment reports the next week.
All right, Rick.
Heavy load prices were about $30 a megawatt hour. Light load was in the $130 range. I note that the constitutionality of the Washington Cap and Invest program has been called into question, and so it will be interesting to see how that plays out. That's all I have.
Thank you. Staff reports.
Well, I'll give the preamble here while they get the presentation set up. So we're going to present our KPIs from the 2022 calendar year, which was approved as part of the strategic planning process in 2021. So we're going to go through all the KPIs for the strategic initiatives in a presentation here in just a second. And as you know, last year in June, we did our deep dive into the strategic plan, which we do about every 5 years. And so this year we're going to be due for a what we call a minor revisions, and we'll convene as staff and present that to the board probably early fall this year. And with that, I will turn it over to my staff to give the KPI update to all of you. And we typically try to do this once a year at either the second or the third meeting. So this year we got it to you early at the second meeting. And so I'm not sure who's up first. I think, John, you might be up first.
Okay. And this is meant to be interactive, so please ask any questions that you might have along the way.
Okay, so basically the board might remember that in August, after a deep dive starting in June, we did some major revisions or substantial revisions to the strategic plan. And I want to remind everyone that the strategic plan that we based this on was the preceding 2022 strategic plans. So you will not see all of the fairly numerous changes that we had and made and were approved by the board back in August. Okay, so for the first KPIs that I'll be presenting, cover ensure reliable supply, practice environmental responsibility, and manage resource portfolio. These are all strategic objectives, high-level objectives associated with electric. My counterpart Water will mention the water topics on these. So basically, our first objective is the high-level reliability objective called SAIDI, which is System Average Interruption Duration Index. And in layman's terms or layperson's terms, this tells you how many outage minutes our average customer experiences in the course of a year. Now, keep in mind, some of our customers experience much more and some much less than this number. And these numbers are for our objectives of being less than 185 is for a predominantly rural utility. Most urban areas, cities, Seattle, Tacoma, would have a substantially lower objective. In our case, our results came in at 204 minutes. In the yellow area between 185 and 250, which is a little bit disappointing. This does exclude a FEMA event where it's an all-hands event where a lot of things are broken. We spent days, almost a week, making all the restorations. And this also excludes, in addition to major events, the BPA SAIDI. I believe a couple of years ago it was asked by the board to include that as a number with respect to reliability. If we average BPA outages throughout our territory, it's actually even worse than ours, 279 minutes for the average customer countywide. Those on the West End would have a lot more than those
BPA
minutes.
BPA have a KPI for their?
They should. Can't speak to that. I do not believe they have a KPI for outages. One thing that hurt us, we had a eastern side transmission outage in April that lasted over an hour and affected about 13,000 people. That hit us pretty hard. We also had outages at the very end of the year, a storm over the Christmas break, and that those two together took us above the 185 target.
John, for George's benefit, tell him what our average outage is here compared to other PUDs around the state of Washington.
Okay, if you just look at the PUD outages, we're pretty typical for a rural distribution company. We try to get below 3 hours total for the average customer. Of course, BPAY outages, we're probably in the top five or six as far as total outage minutes for BPA. End of a long radio line originating out of Shelton. It's double line coming into Port Angeles. Once you get into Port Angeles and beyond, reliability gets much worse. It's a single 115 kV line between Port Angeles and Saffold.
Yeah, and some of these lengths of these outages are greatest out at Nia Bay and so forth, where people depend on subsistence fishery and so forth. And so, if they go 7 or 8 hours, they've trashed their take for the year. I mean, we get some pretty nasty phone calls along those lines.
Yes, we do. Okay, we also have a sure reliable supply for our telecom called system availability. And unfortunately, on 11/4/22, we had a HVAC failure. And this actually resulted in a 15-minute outage for our those we provide internet service to. Due to the rising temperature, we had to switch it and then switch the HVAC around and mitigate that. We were back on after about 15 minutes, but we did see that outage, and you see a single 15-minute outage knocked us out of, quote, the green desired area. And that was a day that we're not normally in the office, but they did respond. Sean responded very quickly, saw the alarms, got into the office, and made the changes to bring services back up online. Okay, and you've seen this before. We have a KPI for tailored toward our RP3 results. And this result for the 20 to 22 is somewhat dated. We have completed our application for 23 to 25, and we'll get new results probably in February announced. But we did receive 100% score on our RP3 last time it was evaluated, and that is the diamond level, which we're very, very happy with. Hopefully we'll do the same thing for the next application. Practice environmental responsibility. This is where we, look at all the issues, safety, otherwise. But it's also spills, all spills, transformer down. Do we have the proper cleanups? Is all the SEPA being handled for our projects? And if we have any investigation of a violation, that puts us in the yellow. If we have any violation, that sinks us actually for the whole year, in my opinion. But for this last year, we had no investigations or violation, and absolutely not any violation. This could be through anything from a job setup on a highway and a vehicle leaking transmission fluid or hydraulic fluid. It's a spill. We got to respond to it appropriately. Probably the majority that we deal on the environmental side is transform all spills during major storms. Manage a resource portfolio. We're making modifications to this KPI in the 2023 strategic plan, primarily for understanding, but when this was set out, we want to keep our cost of conservation in Tier 1 resources below $43 an average megawatt, megawatt. And if we do that, we're considered green. Our conservation cost is actually dropped from the previous reporting to just under $15 a megawatt hour. Our Tier 2 cost was $34.03. That's going to rise a little bit in the next contract. And we need to decide how we're going to apply RECs for this cost, and since it only applies to 15% of our power supply under the EIA. So we're making some changes in this KPI to make it more transparent and understandable. But right now, we're just throwing out numbers. Yeah, we're lower than Tier 2, and we're Tier 2 is lower than $43 a megawatt hour, and so is our conservation.
I thought that we were spending a lot more on conservation, $15 a megawatt hour.
No, for the last CPA, it was fairly cost effective. We are spending a lot of money on conservation, but the Northwest Power Council has some calculations on the offset energy, and according to their template, it's costing $15 a megawatt hour. Now, with the market prices increasing substantially in the next CPA, we have a little bit of concern that that's going to drive us into much more costly conservation. But we're just now getting started with our conservation potential assessment, and we'll know more at the middle of this year. But no, so far our conservation is fairly cost effective. And plus, keep in mind, it's looking back. And it's not looking back from today, it's looking back from the last audit. Okay, I'm going to have to invite Lori up here to help us out. We have a mutual responsibility for all these KPIs associated with internal and external risk.
So we have three KPIs that we go over for managing risk. The first one is the claims paid out for the year. The claims can be for anything from disputes on bills. It could be minor damage that occurs out in the field when they're doing their work. For this, for 20, the goal of the KPI is to have less than 7 events paid throughout the year. For 2022, we had 5 claims paid, and it was for a total of $5,621. This was actually down 1 claim from 2021.
And I'll add in the new strategic plan, we're changing the number to a dollar amount, which is probably more relevant to the consequences of this problem. And these are damages that we've evaluated our utility being at fault. Okay, well, this last year we had our, every 3 years we have an AGIS inspection, which is associated with their insurance underwriter. And they do an evaluation for 12 topics involving operations, taking calls, engineering standards, environmental, a lot of things. And this last evaluation, I think we had 6 recommendations, which is very few for an AGIS inspection. We used to get 20 or 30. And none of our programs, the 12 that they looked at, were deemed in any way unsatisfactory or needed to improve.
So managing risk affects all the areas of the utility. And as we went through our strategic plan and evaluated areas that we felt needed improvement, we've initiated projects to work on making things better throughout the district. Over the course of the year, we've been engaging in these projects, and the goal of the KPI is that in the goal of the KPI, sorry, is that 90% of the active projects are on track. So for 2022, 91 of the 106 active projects were complete or on track. And this came in at a percentage of 86%. So we were just falling short of the 90% that we were hoping to get to.
Yes, and I'll add that last year, the previous reporting, we actually had like 76% primarily due to COVID. Some of these projects were delayed due to supply chain issues, so we're still seeing some lag from that. But for the over 100 or 106 projects, each one of these projects touches upon a strategic initiative
associated with each of the 11 strategic objectives in the strategic plan. So we design projects to meet those criteria or to meet those objectives.
Any questions?
No, I think 90% is a lofty goal, so getting to 86 is commendable.
Well, no, I appreciate that because it may be a little too high, but we're going to try to get to the 90%. Actually, I think we did pretty well this time, but usually we fall a little bit short on this one. It's tough.
Hey, good afternoon again. Bone Kendrick, manager of Water and Wastewater Systems here. So the three strategic objectives I'll be presenting on here today is ensuring reliable supply, practicing environmental responsibility, and managing resource portfolio. My colleague Ruth Cook will be presenting on Water and Wastewater's practice of financial responsibility. So KPI for ensuring reliable supply is major emergency events, less than one per quarter is our target. And per our emergency response plan, a major emergency event is any event where customers are basically going to be out of water for a significant amount of time, like multiple days or up to weeks. An event that requires notification of local law enforcement, immediate notification of Department of Health, or say the county environmental management. Happy to say that we did not have any major emergency events in accordance with our definition in our emergency response plan, but we did have one significant emergency. January 6th of 22, we had a pretty large water main break in the Fairview water system on a 12-inch water main. Had some customers out overnight, needed to notify Department of Health. Obviously, that situation, we did have a boil water notice associated with that event. But we got through it, challenging time. The team really came together and did our best to get folks back in water the following day. Practicing environmental responsibility, our 2022 KPI for this strategic objective is related to water violations. So basically any sort of water quality violation. So what I'll point out here is in third quarter, we did have a lead and copper rule monitoring violation that was not actually like high lead or high copper in a sample result. It was that we got our sample results to them a day late. And so the Department of Health on this particular issue was not able to have any flexibility with that. They acknowledged that our lead and copper samples were totally within allowable limits, well below the maximum contaminant levels. But because one of those customer-collected samples was collected a day late, we got hit with a monitoring violation. So that was unfortunate. Next year, we'll be getting those notices out to the customers in further advance, so they've got plenty of time to take those samples themselves. Managing resource portfolio in 2022, the KPI was water system loss rates. And this is an area where water really has a lot of ground to make. Specifically in our Clallam Bay and Port Angeles composite water systems, we have numbers that are almost double what is deemed acceptable by the Department of Health per AWW, American Water Works Association standards, which is 10%. So Clallam Bay TQ, we're actually looking at almost double that, and in Port Angeles Composite, almost double that. We have a significant infrastructure replacement project, primarily water main replacement project out in Clallam Bay CQ. I expect to see this number much closer to 10% after that project is complete, and that's under construction right now. Port Angeles Composite, that leak I referred to earlier, although it did take place in early 22, I think that certainly impacted our water loss there, as well as another long duration leak that we had in our Fairview water system that was going on in a farmer's field basically for 4 months before we could find it. So some of the ways that we can bring these numbers down is through distribution system monitoring, metering, leak detection using acoustic techniques, and those are certainly strategies that we're looking to implement in those water systems. Our other water systems are looking good. We're trending down in Carlsberg water system here. We had some large leaks there in 19 and 20, and we did not have one in 21 or 22, so we're looking good there. And our numbers are below 10% in all of our other water systems. Ratio of water supply right to full build-out is a KPI for managing resource portfolio. This is a metric that I'm looking to maybe make a little shift in strategic objective now that I'm here in the manager's role. I think we're a little heavily focused on this full build-out concept. Both the Department of Health, Department of Ecology really look at water rights portfolios in more of an acceptable planning period. So 20, 30-year horizon, to come up with a conceptual full build-out number and seek those sorts of water rights on the front end is really not the way that those primacy agencies operate. And I think we'd be hard-pressed to be able to be successful in having 100% water rights up front from, say, Department of Ecology if we're only utilizing, like we are here in the Carlsberg water system, say 20% of our existing water rights portfolio. So this is almost like an unattainable metric, and so I'm looking to maybe make a minor revision in this for our 23 strategic plan. And I'll turn it over to Ruth.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'll be going over two KPIs, provide stable rates and be financially responsible. To start, there's an error in the report in your board packet. The 2022 rate increase was 2.25%, not 3.5%, which I think is what's in your board packet. For this strategic objective, provide stable rates, the picture of excellence we defined as customers experience stable rates with no more than a 2% rate adjustment over the previous five-year average rate adjustment. So you can see that the 2.25% is well below the 4%, which is the average of the previous 5 years, plus 2%, which totals 6%. The second part of this picture of excellence, which is also a KPI, is that over the last 10 years, the replacement capital costs are within 15% of depreciation, and Lori will go over that in just a few slides.
Ruth?
Yes.
Do you think that's a long enough period to really give us a sense of, you know, the fluctuations that take out there that, you know, we can control the situation, you know, we fix it and get it under control, but it may have cost us something that now is going to raise the rates later. And so do you think that the 6-year window there is sufficient, or should we be looking at longer time frames on this, you know?
Go ahead, Sean.
I was just going to say, yeah, we chose this planning horizon because it overlaps BPA rate cases. And if we do our 10-year capital plan correctly, we should be able to stay within the 2% unless something like you're saying catastrophic were to happen. But yeah, the metric here, we feel comfortable with it, but if the board has recommendations for a change, we're all ears.
I have a question, not different than
something. Yeah, go ahead.
So I have to confess, I don't really get this metric here, the KPI itself. I'm sure I'm missing something obvious, but to me it reads like the target is to see no more than a 6% rate increase per year. Is that really what that's saying? Or?
Well, for this time frame, it's 6%.
But that's a cumulative over the time period. Right.
Well, it's the average of the prior 5 years.
Okay, so it's not the annual increase. It would be the average.
We don't want any single year to be more than the average of the previous 5 years plus 2%. In the interest of providing small stable rate increases.
So that number is what?
The 6%?
Yeah.
The 6% is the average of 2017 through 2021 plus 2%.
So we could have 6%.
Rate, yes, rate that increase. Is what that's saying.
And still be green.
And still be in line with our picture of excellence.
So I guess my question, and maybe this isn't the time to really dive into this, but a 6% increase would be a lot in any given year. That's possible, not desirable. But so I guess I'm curious where the formula comes from. Is that an industry standard, taking an average over some term period? And then I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah, our previous board, it is confusing. I'll give you that. So the rate increase needed to be between 2% and 6% because it's plus or minus.
Right. Okay.
So it needs to be within that window to be acceptable for the KPI. And historically, go back a decade, our rate increases would be concurrent with the BPA increase. So we would have sometimes maybe a 9, even a double-digit rate increase. And the board decided that we would like to split those up and have more flat levelized increases year over year that are more in line with inflation versus, you know, rate shock that happens with a double-digit increase. And so the KPI was developed to try to mitigate rate shock.
Okay. So moving on, the other KPIs for this objective are to evaluate our budget to actuals for both revenues and expenses for both electric and water. The results provided here are year-to-date through November, and we should have December finalized mid-February, so I think we'd like to come back at that point. And I also need to note that for power, we weather-adjusted both sales and purchase power, and we excluded bond defeasance and bond issue-related proceeds and transfers just so that we could look strictly at budgeted line items. For electric revenue, we were over budget by $4.4 million, or 6.84%, which puts us in the yellow KPI. This was largely due to higher BPA energy efficiency incentive monies and also larger customer contributions and slightly greater electric sales. Electric expenses are under budget by $42,000, which is 0.06%, which puts us in the green. For water, water revenue is over budget by $204,000 or 3.124%, which puts them in the green KPI. That was largely due to higher than expected customer contributions and FEMA monies. Water expenses are under budget by $769,000 or 11.18%, which puts them in the red KPI. This is largely due to a delay in the CQ Clallam Bay main replacement work. That work didn't start until the end of 2022, and we didn't draw on the loan for that work until January of this year. So we had budgeted to pay those that debt service, but we're not going to be paying that this year after all. Or I should say paying it in 2022. And I will turn it over to Lori briefly.
So the next KPI is taking a look at the ratio of capital expenditures to our depreciation expense each year. Typically, that ratio is an indication of growth for a normal business. The higher the ratio, the more you would expect an expansion in that business, but for the utility industry, it's not unusual to see a ratio of up to 2 to 1 just because of the money that you have to spend out to maintain your infrastructure. for our district, we're pretty stable. We're pretty stable in terms of growth, but we do have the challenge, especially with the water division, of maintaining and improving the infrastructure because it is aging. So, for the goal for the KPI is to keep capital expenditures within 15% of our depreciation for the year. And in evaluating this, because we don't have December numbers complete, we did look at January through November. We pulled data from our budget for that time period and compared it to the depreciation expense for the same time period. For electric, the capital expenditures exceeded depreciation by 6.82%, so it fell within the green range. For water, the capital expenses exceeded depreciation by 156%. And that goes to just the fact that there are a lot of issues within the water infrastructure where things are aging and they're needing to be maintained. When you look at the capital expenses for 2022 for water, about 50% of what came through budget was related to the issues out in Holland Bay and CQ. And the major projects that it's doing out there to ensure reliability. And that's the challenge with the water, I think, and why things are the way they are for the moment, is that you need to be doing that work to do the reliability, but we need to find a way to do it and keep our rates stable. So it will be probably an ongoing challenge.
Okay, so the second objective I'll be going over is be financially responsible. And we defined our picture of excellence as a healthy, sustainable financial position supported by active management of district budgetary plan, maintain an AA3 rating with Moody's Investor Service while achieving the objectives and initiatives of the strategic plan. So to start, the district is highly engaged with its budgetary plan. And with regards to the second part of that goal, the district did maintain its AA3 rating with its last bond issue. The KPIs for this objective are the metrics of our internal financial policy. The debt service coverage ratio, it's a measure of how many times the entity can pay its debt with its available cash, I should say its current annual debt. The debt-to-asset ratio, it's a measure of assets consumed if we were to pay our debt in full. And the cash reserves, days cash on hand, it's a measure of how many days of operating expenses we have on hand. So, again, these results are through November. And starting with the debt service coverage ratio, electric's debt service coverage is 7.8 times, water's is 3.9 times. So those are both above our target of 2 times. Electric's debt-to-asset ratio is 18.24%. Water's ratio is 17.32, both below our ceiling of 40. For cash reserves, we included all labor costs, both O&M and capital. And so for electric's ending operating cash reserves for November 2022, we had $25.9 million or 175 days cash on hand. Water's ending operating cash reserves were $1.4 million or 183 days. But water did just do a recent transfer from its capital reserves to its operating reserves. So once we get through December, we will see that number come down significantly.
Yeah, I got a question that, for you, and actually George may elucidate this too. The 175-day cash reserve, are there case studies out there that looked at a PUD that got in the situation and they had to burn through cash reserves and they went through so much, that, you know, for certain reasons and kind of what happened and so forth like that, that because I'm just curious, what do we end up really using the cash reserve for? You know, we say we're going to pay bills if we don't get revenue, but when do we not get revenue, you know, and stuff like that. So what are those situations where, you know, we really, we can see what's really going on?
It
Well, there's two advantages to having a certain level of days cash on hand. The first is to help mitigate risk. You know, if we were to experience some sort of catastrophe, we could continue operating. The other is it affects our credit rating, so how much we can borrow money for. So Moody's, that's who evaluates our credit risk. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in Moody's, they're moving to a recommendation for utilities to have between 180 and 210 because of the risk in the market as well. So we're a load following customer, but utilities that do have market risk, they're downgrading them if they're not within the 180 to 210 reserve level.
Okay. But that would be like slice or slice plot.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'll come around to that later, I think, in terms of analysis. Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Who's up next? Right.
Nicole is actually out today, so I'm going to fill in for her. I'll see if I can do them justice. So Nicole Hartman, our Communications and Government Relations Manager, is in charge of influence regulatory issues and enhanced customer partnerships. And so the first one here on influence regulatory issues, representation at affiliated regulatory organizations and committees. So at our last meeting, you all approved our delegates for like WPUDA, APPA, et cetera. And so we finished last year with the result of 90% of staff attending those meetings. Now, granted, we kind of cheated with COVID because it became really easy to just jump on a Zoom meeting. So we probably need to look at this one and see if the metrics here make sense. But nonetheless, last year we achieved 90%. And then the relevant monthly print or digital. So we achieved 100%, which is in the green. Nicole has contracts in place with our local newspapers where she does mostly conservation advertisements, but she also promotes Smart Hub, our low-income assistance program, Call Before You Dig. She does all of those on a monthly basis, and we achieve that with the three newspapers here locally. The enhanced customer partnerships, so the website users versus the last 30 days. Again, I believe this is one that we changed for this coming year because of COVID. In the past, if we had 5,000 unique visitors to our website, it was considered green. As you can see, we're more than double that now. Through COVID, we had a lot of customers who decided to engage with us remotely, and we have enhanced our website tremendously in the past few years to accommodate the needs of our customers, signing for service, disconnects, reconnects, et cetera. Customers can now do that all from our website. Facebook page engagements, our green here is 20% likes to customers ratio. And in 2022, we achieved 24.5%. And just a note here, Nicole actually was nominated for and received an NWPPA Excellence in Communications Award for her social media outreach, specifically for Facebook. And so this was something that she was nominated for by her peers and received that award, something that she and all of us are extremely proud of. And then finally, for enhanced customer partnerships, our community outreach events. Unfortunately, last year we had a lot of things that were canceled again that were out of our control. Didn't necessarily think that it was fair to put us in the red, but technically we probably were. We put us in the yellow because it was just basically something that was out of our control. We have gotten feedback that, like the home show and, you know, obviously the fair happened last year, but all the events that we typically participate in, they do look like they're going to be slated for this year. So we'll get back on into participating in those. George is also out, so I will take his. George Drake is our safety manager. He is responsible for lost time, recordable injuries, education on electrical safety in the community, recognition of our departments for being accident-free, and then our field employee safety audits.
So the slide, this is actually incorrect. I meant to catch it before it went out to you. Last year was a banner year for us. We actually had zero lost time injuries. And to my knowledge, Jamie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's never happened before at the district. So that was a huge milestone for us to achieve last year. No lost time, which just is a testament to all of our employees to make sure that we're doing things safely and correctly.
So Q2 and 3 should be zero?
Yes, those should be zero. Recordable injuries, we had one last year. So recordable injury is somebody who was hurt at work, but we were able to keep them employed, just had to modify their job duties. So maybe somebody in operations, we've had them come in and answer phones and customer service before to keep them at work. We only had one of those last year for the entire year. So to go on our banner year, that's impressive for us. And again, I'm not sure we've ever had that few of recordable injuries here at the PUD. Educate the public on electrical safety. This is something that we love to do. We have a big table that has a school bus, and it's this big demonstration platform, and our safety manager will go out into the community, typically at elementary schools, and give safety presentations. The kids absolutely love it because it sparks and they cheer and all that. It's pretty fun. If you haven't seen it, I recommend that you do. But we did all the ones that we were requested to do last year. So we were green at 100% on those. And then recognition of departments that were 1 year accident-free. We just got done recognizing some departments the week before last for our no time loss this last year. And George is in the process, of ordering hoodies for all of the departments that say accident-free on them to celebrate that milestone that we've never had before. So I know people were really excited about that when we was going out getting sizing. So employees can showcase their accident-free workplace out in the community, which is something that we're all extremely proud of. And the last one here, complete the average of 3 field safety audits per quarter. So George will do unplanned site visits to all of our operations personnel, make sure that when he arrives on site, they're wearing their PPE, have their hard hats on, goggles if necessary. So he's done all of those. He does more than 3 actually per quarter. So we're green there. And I believe that was the last one for him. And Jamie, you're up.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I am here to report on the strategic objective, attract and retain great people. And we have 4 KPIs that help us measure whether we're doing a good job at that or not. So the first one is performance appraisals. All of our staff employees have annual performance appraisals. So we like to measure, you know, that those are done in a timely manner. And so first quarter of last year, we were in the red. So that was an appraisal that was more than 30 days past due. Besides that, though, quarter 2, quarter 3, we were back in the green. And then quarter 4, we did have one that was out about 15 days. So we are unable to do retro pay to our employees due to the auditor. And so we want to make sure that we do those in a timely basis because that is important to recognize people and go over their achievements. The second KPI is turnover rate. So I think we are coming on into like the downturn of the retirements. We have so many new employees, but you can see there we have maintained a green rating through all the quarters of last year. And we've broken it up into retirements and terminations. Those terminations, the ones we saw in 2022, we had a handful of employees that decided to leave Clallam County. You know, they went other areas, other utilities on the other side of the mountains. And so that is, you know, why we had voluntary terminations.
Jamie, so our turnover rate is less than 5%?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Do you know what it is offhand for linemen?
I think we just lost one last year to a different utility in Central Washington.
Yeah,
Two?
Yeah, and the other one that left, one went to Central Washington, the other one left for family reasons and went back to the East Coast.
Okay, so we're green because we've got a low turnover rate, and yet we're having to raise our labor rates because...
Because City of Port Angeles raised theirs, and we didn't want to lose all the people we got.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, because our neighbors are not as probably blessed as we are with, you know, our staff. We do have excellent linemen in our field personnel. We're very fortunate in the utility community, but with them driving that up, we got put in a predicament where a lot of our linemen could go to another utility without uprooting their family.
Yeah, okay, so the high, could be a problem if we don't raise the rates.
Yeah, yeah. We did get feedback that prior to settling our contract, I believe we had three or four linemen that were actually supposed to go have an interview at City of Port Angeles, and we were able to remedy that. So.
Okay.
The next KPI is training attendance, and this is for human resources training. So the pandemic did put a little bit of a damper on that. We participate in the NWPPA leadership courses, and we like to bring those in. We usually fill them full of all of our managers, supervisors, and then sometimes some frontline foremen that are out in the field, just so we can build a culture and everybody is on kind of the same path of how we want to conduct business. And so quarter three, we did bring in two of those leadership courses, and we had 99% participation with our employees that were invited to it. And then lastly is the RP3 score, which John Purvis touched on a little bit, but we are looking at our last score and eagerly awaiting our new score, that we did get 100% on the RP3 award. There is a big section in there on workforce development, so we take a lot of pride in being able to be part of that score.
Okay.
Any other questions? That is it.
That wraps that up.
Yep, I am it.
Thanks, Jim.
Hey, Sean, I beg the indulgence of the review and the commissioners and everybody present. There's one issue that I missed in my comments on commissioners, and since George is here, if I may, I'd like to address it. And that is, I listened in to the Energy Committee, and there was a lot of talk about the wildfire legislation, and I thought it was really good. And yet there was this kickback that, you know, going out and turning off meters is a real impossibility for rural areas. And yet, well, that's us too, and yet we've spent a lot of money putting in smart meters and so forth on the idea that we could turn power off from remote locations. And so tell me if I'm missing something and I'll just shut up and go away. And I'm like, okay, you know, I don't get it. But doesn't smart meters get us to a position where we're better to control the grid in terms of turning it on and off in case of fires? Or, you know, John, anybody, you know.
John can probably talk to this better than I can, but the smart meter, like our system only allows us to turn off the meter so that it's still energized up to the point of the house.
All right, so we don't have anything in between the smart meter and the substation.
I'll let John answer that question about the system.
Okay, so basically the smart meter, according to our presentation from a number of years ago, included a number of efficiency and optimization benefits, response time, certainty reporting to outages, is power available or not. But I think what you're talking about, Jim, is basically the ability to implement a demand response program based on customer use and potential signals where we have a high cost power procurement coincidental to a BPA demand charge. And yes, our smart meters include.
You're talking about wildfires.
Oh, wildfires?
Yeah, wildfires.
Just to shut the meters off.
Okay. So wildfires, if we did a shutoff for wildfires, we have the ability through SCADA to do that, plus we have the ability via BPA to do that as well, by basically contacting them and having them open up a source. The one area that we're most concerned about for wildfires is the backup transmission line between Discovery Bay and Blinn. And that line we automatically de-energize between June through October as a fire mitigation plan. We started doing that about 3 years ago. So we keep it de-energized except during the storm season we might have to rely upon it.
Okay, so it sounds like to me maybe this is not a big issue for us, but it may be so for some other PUDs, and if that's the case, all right, I stand back and, you guys work the nuances of that legislation. Oh, yeah. I'd be disappointed if you didn't.
So it's probably PUD dependent. But we have cases where the power system shut off in order to reduce or mitigate issues related to wildfires is in conflict with the need to have water supply, connection between the electricity provided and the need to be able to pump water. And so in some areas that conflict is real and present, and there's a debate, and other areas not. So
okay.
It does. I hope that helps because that's an issue that came up.
We still have to work out the technological bug between power that shuts off water that we need to fight fires with versus just shutting off power that so we don't have a hot line laying on the ground.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's all workable over time and money. Okay. Thank you, George, for stepping up. And we have no more board actions.
I did not capture any board action at this
time. I need to send a reminder out to the commissioners for the February 21st date.
Didn't you have a little list of the actions from last time and how we did?
Yes, it's in the contract.
Okay, we don't want to have it on. Okay. Yeah, I read it. I just didn't know if it ought to be on here. We'll talk about that later. Okay, public comment round number two, non-agenda comments. Do we have any comments from the public? Any luck here? Eric, is he?
No, I don't believe Ray is number one. And we do not have any on the side of the sheet.
Did you think he just left his hand up?
I believe he did from earlier.
Okay. Any other questions, comments from the gallery out here?
Oh, Randy, put his hand up again, Eric.
Hands up again.
Sorry, I wasn't hearing very clearly what you were saying there earlier, but maybe that was about my responding to me. I'm interested. It was a good presentation from Wakuda. I wonder if they've done programs to assist PUDs in developing customer service surveys and performance audits. Is that part of the program they have to help arrange those, provide resources towards performing those?
Okay, we captured comment, I think. Was there a question in there that needs to be answered at some point?
We captured it in the recording.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Any further comments? Okay, then we are adjourned. Thank you.